From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Pranksters, predators, annoyances, internet trolls. These anonymous online provocateurs bombard chat rooms, spread fake news, and stalk and harass with consequences on and beyond the web. As a growing part of our national conversation moves online, trolls are coming along, shutting down dialogue, derailing discussion, puncturing pomposity, they might say. Well, what about it? This hour On Point, the trouble with trolls on the internet. You can join the conversation. Have you seen the work of trolls online? Have you been fooled, targeted, wounded, entertained? Is there a way to stop them? Should we try to? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Cambridge, Massachusetts, is Jonathan Zittrain, professor of Internet Law and Computer Science at Harvard University, co-director of Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society, author of The Future of the Internet and How to Stop It. Jonathan, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Also with us from the studios of the Radio Foundation in New York City is Whitney Phillips. She lectures on digital culture at New York University. A digital ethnographer, she wrote her dissertation on internet trolls. She blogs at billionsandbillions.com. Whitney Phillips, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Tom.
So remind us of some of what's been going on lately. I mean, we had just last week, at the height of Hurricane Sandy and all the difficult immediate aftermath, here we've got this troll. Comfortably Smug was the handle. And this guy turns out is a young hedge fund guy and political advisor who's since been outed and named. And he's putting out false reports of power going down in Manhattan the floor of the New York Stock Exchange flooded with 3 feet of water. Here's one vein of trolling, Whitney. What's this one, the news vein?
Well, I think, first of all, it's really important to stop and think about the term trolling itself, because especially in recent months, but this also has been true in the last year or two, the term is becoming fuzzier and fuzzier. And as you just mentioned, there's lots of different kinds of trolls. There are lots of different sorts of behaviors. The problem is that we're using the same noun to describe all of them, and that can be very confusing. And so in Comfortably Smug's case, I mean, the coverage of it that I've seen, actually, it's more that members of the media are calling him a troll. I've not actually seen him describe himself as a troll. And for me, the research that I've done focuses on those individuals who describe that's their identity. They are trolls. They think of themselves as trolls. They describe what they do as trolling, and they enjoy it. And I'm not entirely sure how and if Comfortably Smug meets that subcultural definition, but that certainly is the term others have applied to him.
But it just may be, Whitney, that neither you nor trolls themselves get to make up this definition. We've got a whole country watching on here, dealing with consequences, and media and more calling this troll. I mean, it may not be one where academics or trolls themselves get to define the term. It may get a cultural definition, and it's been tagged on this guy, Comfortably Smug. His name is Shashank Tripathi, 29-year-old hedge fund guy. So, I mean, he's a troll. He's a troll, right?
And I'm not saying that the term hasn't taken on a life of its own, but it's just that when we talk about it, it's important to really clarify what we mean, because for a lot of people, when they hear the word troll, they think the subcultural version. For other people, when they hear the word troll, they think they just mean, an online bully. So what I'm saying is not that any of those definitions are wrong or that you can be wrong, but that you need to explain carefully what you mean before the conversation proceeds further. That's all.
We'll go very fine grain on how people understand what it means, but I think just for people who may not be in this world to see how it works. I mean, Jonathan, there's this case of the guy who went by the name Violent Acres on Reddit, the site where so much gets pulled up and millions of people come on the web to see what's going on. And suddenly, here he is, outed in a big way, and it's not pretty, sort of pedophilia and racism and misogyny and his name attached to it. Why did that make such a big noise in the internet realm, the troll realm, Jonathan?
Well, if there's something in common between the Violet Anchors example you just mentioned and the previous example of Comfortably Smug, and those are look like they're pretty far removed from each other, it's that they share in common at times operating in bad faith. They might kind of have a sense that what they're doing is wrong. In fact, that's the point. And they're also trying to get a rise out of people. They're using that bad faith to act as if they are sincere and to depend on the good offices of others to get other people kind of either up in arms or behaving a certain way. So Comfortably Smug, I think, fits that pretty well because he was spreading deliberate misinformation, I think in an attempt to see just how far he could go, how many retweets could he get, and probably didn't reflect that it actually might be affecting real people in a very real and immediate way. And of course, his last tweet from the 30th of October was, "I wish to offer the people of New York a sincere, humble, and unconditional apology." And that, I don't know, I'd say that might be in good faith.
I mean, the thing was, now, as his tweets went out and got retweeted, they became sort of understood as maybe fact and got picked up by, as this has happened before, by mainstream news organizations, CNN, The Weather Channel, and others kind of running with bits of this just junk information out there.
And in fact, you can see how they would do it because there's such a hunger for the scoop to be the first one with new information, even by seconds. So as an unfolding crisis is happening, you kind of don't always stop to vet. Now, in that case, Twitter actually had some interesting self-correcting mechanisms, and this brings it back maybe to your example of Violent Acres. Was it a self-correcting mechanism that Gawker, which sort of straddles between new and old media, went to the trouble of figuring out who this guy was with a little triangulation and then outing him? And as best I can tell, his reaction to being outed was sad that the game was over in a sense, that he might now get kicked off Reddit because of all of this, but not a sense that he had been treated unfairly. I think he realized in a way that sauce for the goose was sauce for the gander, and if he's posting pictures of people unawares that would make them intensely uncomfortable if they knew they were being posted.
Underage girls and all the rest.
Exactly. I think there's some sense in which he understood that he was fair game for what they call a good old-fashioned doxing, having him his identity outed.
I think most people experience trolling in some kind of middle ground where it's, you know, on conversation threads and boards online. But here at Reddit, Violent Acres had Adrian Chen of Gawker.com go after him, figure out who he was. And it's all over now. There's Michael Brooch, and he's a sort of middle-aged guy in a Dallas suburb who's, as Adrian Chen said, had been on Reddit an unending fountain of racism, porn, gore, misogyny, incest, and exotic abominations yet unnamed. What neck of the troll woods would you put Violent Acres in, Whitney? Does he meet your strict definition?
Oh, my definition is not that strict. I'm just, my research focuses on those who self-identify, and so that's really my area of expertise. I just don't want to say that I can speak for or on behalf of or about all trolls across the internet.
Would you put him in that camp?
You know, that's a little bit tricky because once his name was once his identity was revealed, then suddenly when he was giving interviews, he would say, "Oh well, I was just trolling." So he was distancing himself from his behaviors. At the same time, he has admitted that these are behaviors he actually likes. I mean, he's sort of interested in what's referred to as jailbait. So 16, 17-year-old girls, still very much illegal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, but so he both kind of embraces those behaviors, certainly embraced those behaviors before he was outed. But then once he was outed, trolling became the catch-all justification. He was just, as he said in the Anderson Cooper interview in the wake of his outing, he was just trolling and he was just giving the Redditors what they wanted, that he wasn't even, you know, he really was just supplying something that they were interested in. And so, you know, he has used the term to describe himself, but as a way of mitigating his own responsibility.
And you've got this, I mean, in the media certainly and beyond, this is put on lots of things. You've got this Canadian teen who killed herself after a troll sent around pictures of her with her breasts uncovered, very young. This followed her from school to school as she tried to escape it. Finally, suicide. You had the double organ transplant patient targeted by trolls, said he didn't deserve his organs. You had heinous group after Sandy posting fake tweets claiming to show African-American looters after Hurricane Sandy. Absolute fabrications, but playing the kind of race card there. And all these coming under this umbrella, Jonathan, of troll, and again, that most people, I think, run into when they go someplace online to have a conversation, and in the middle of it, somebody shows up with a kind of, I don't know, slashing, cutting, blow it all up comment that may be seen as looking to puncture pomposity, but a lot of people experience it as almost vandalism on the web, Jonathan.
Well, and of course, different places online have very different feels to them. Often the comment thread at the end of a mainstream newspaper article tends to draw one kind of conversation, and there are other corners of the internet that draw other kinds of conversations. And it might be worth thinking about the troll who acts to kind of enter a community as a new person with the purpose of upsetting it, and often that might well be the object. How can I get everybody who was comfortably talking to one another up in arms? And then later would say, well, they needed somebody to kind of push them from outside and challenge their assumptions sort of thing.
Is the troll just our new gadfly, our new razor wit, or do you see it as more destructive than that?
Well, I do think it can be too easy to write somebody off as a troll. Mm. The fact that somebody might be operating in bad faith, I don't think should mean that people are not accorded the assumption of good faith when they first enter a community. And Wikipedia is great about that. I mean, Wikipedia, if somebody's vandalizing a page, it will assume the best again and again. Oh, let me help you with that. It looks like you're making a mistake.
You're trying.
There's something productive to doing that, and sometimes the trolls go elsewhere when that happens.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about internet trolls, online pranksters, bullies, vandals, thugs, maybe gadflies, and their footprint in our increasingly online national conversation. Jonathan Zittrain joins us today from Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society, author of The Future of the Internet and How to Stop It. Whitney Phillips is here, lecturer on digital culture at NYU, blogs at billionsandbillions.com. It's in the popular culture. Aaron Sorkin's show Newsroom debuted last summer, included a storyline dealing with trolling. Here's a scene where Neil Sampat, played by Dev Patel, explains trolling to his boss.
Internet trolls, it's a play on a phishing term. People who go to message boards and try to hijack the conversation by being incendiary.
What about them?
Turns out they have their own websites, like an online clubhouse. And to be accepted to the group, you have to be able to point to a successful incident of trolling. A recent time when you made a whole bunch of posters lose their minds. Or better yet, got the site monitor to shut down the board.
Make people lose their minds. Make them shut down the board. We got lots of response online here. Jonathan Whitney AC says, it ruins conversations. You can feel the petty glee and spite they enjoy in trolling. William James says, people have become ever more mean and nasty in the last 30 or so years. I see it every day. But then Greg writes, I think the term is mostly used on those with whom we disagree. You know, many live in a bubble, I summarize a little here, but have no idea what the real America thinks. When confronted, they lash out and get personal and call that messenger a troll. What about that view, Jonathan?
Well, I think there's truth to it. It may be that people, until the internet went mainstream, didn't have a ton of experience having ongoing conversations with people with whom they disagreed and were otherwise strangers. So you don't have kind of the friendship to lean on when there's a disagreement.
Right.
And I see a positive side to that, which is we're all learning some like basic civic skills on how to have a conversation with people that you disagree with. And there's going to be all sorts of problems of bad faith, either individually, which a lot of the trolling that the Aaron Sorkin clip described would be, and some of the other examples. And even in groups, you might have a group of people in one zone of the web say they're going to go raid another zone and create trouble from multiple angles. And on that front, it's worth noting Gawker's description of Reddit was pretty negative, the one you cited. But Reddit is a haven for all sorts of things and often for collective action that is quite positive. And it's the kind of thing that I think can often give you faith, even as there's a real problem here with some forms of trolling that has to be dealt with. Reddit has one of the biggest secret Santa programs in the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Reddit's huge. It's continents and with all kinds of people, even some who go after trolls. I guess nobody's saying that it's overrunning the online dialogue or even action platform, but many complain that it is sort of insinuating a kind of deep incivility there. I mean, here's a couple of different perspectives. Whitney, for your consideration, Shag writes to us. He says, you know, by the definition that's being tossed around, I'm a troll. The relative anonymity of a forum allows, he's writing to us here, allows me to express myself in an open and honest way that I might not be able to with my boss, a coworker, my neighbor, or even members of my family. I find it refreshing and even cathartic. On the other hand, you've got here, Josh writes into us on Facebook and says, you know, he's been running a website with an active community for 15 years. But with all the sort of troll presence and even troll tolerance now, he sees many communities, including his own, becoming inexorably less civil. So what is it, Whitney? Is it a way for honesty, or is it a way to incivility? Do those have to be the same?
I would say my answer to that is yes to all of it. The problem, well, not problem for me, the really interesting aspect of trolling is that it runs such a wide gamut of behaviors. So it's really hard to make a blanket statement about trolling generally or trolls generally, because there really is no such thing. You have, on one end of the spectrum, you have trolls who go after, and this is part of the research that I've done for my dissertation, is you have trolls who go after, for example, the friends and family of recently murdered children or people who have killed themselves.
Yeah, I mean, just
so that's the really,
horrible,
really extreme version of trolling. And then you have, you know, somewhere in the middle, you have people who are sort of being mischievous and kind of winding other people up, but it may be making an argument unto itself that it's actually trying to sort of teach a lesson of some kind, you know, fighting against racism and sexism by engaging in racist and sexist behaviors to get people to react against those very behaviors. Then on the very far end of the spectrum, you have playful, not exactly harmless, because, you know, it's still based on upsetting other people, but you have kind of pranks, innocent-ish pranks that are just designed to elicit a chuckle, not meant to hurt anybody, not meant to destroy any families, or not meant to
drive anybody to suicide.
Right, exactly. So it's really, really hard to try to pinpoint how we should respond to trolling writ large, because, again, it contains all of those variations. And a person who identifies as a troll who could, at different times of the day, engage in really problematic behaviors in the morning and not so problematic behaviors in the afternoon. So it's such an unwieldy concept, which, again, is very interesting when you're studying it. But from the perspective of just a regular internet user or someone who wants to start drafting legislation, for example, it's almost an impossible task to even know where to begin.
And yet some have tried. I think Australia has got some legislation bumping around about trolls. Jonathan Whitney, do you know about that?
Well, Australia, the United Kingdom has been doing it. And I confess, I'm skeptical of trying to kind of pull the legislative lever to try to deal with this
sort
of kind
of stuff. Punish trolls or something. I mean, we've got the First Amendment here. We've got the kind of the gold standard of freedom of expression here.
And I think too often there ends up being an obsession around anonymity and thinking that anonymity is the problem. If only we could unmask people, they would behave better. And I think that's both over and under inclusive as a remedy. But that isn't to say that we shouldn't be thinking about ways to make for a more humanistic internet. And there's at least two kinds of trolls we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. One is the person that maybe doesn't fully appreciate the impact of what he or she is doing, that mm-hmm. you realize you're griefing somebody, but it just doesn't register fully.
And define that verb, griefing?
Griefing, I would think, is trying to make somebody feel bad, doing mm-hmm. your best mm-hmm. to
not just disagreeing with them, but
an extremely negative emotion. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And just not appreciating that that's a bad thing to do because you're in the comfort of your own home in your pajamas or whatever doing it. There's another kind of trolling, I think, which just represents a mismatch between what people think they're doing in the same online space. And a neat example of that that I was reminded of by Whitney's kind of describing the worst trolls as the ones who might bother people who just lost somebody.
Yeah.
In the game World of Warcraft, where, of course, the whole point in a game like that is to be able to be cruel and vicious mm-hmm. and kill other people
Conquer.
In the game. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And that's part of the fun, as it were. An actual real-life player died in real life and had been so associated with so many other players in the guild that they wanted to do an online wake for the person, not the character, in the World of Warcraft. And people sort of gathered in a demilitarized zone to hold the service, and then it got raided intentionally by another group of players who killed everybody.
Oh,
and it's both funny and tragic.
Yeah.
And that's an example of that that mismatch.
I want to come in and look at anonymity. It plays an enormous role here, but we've got so many listeners lined up to join us here. Sean in Buffalo, New York. Thanks for calling, Sean. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to point out, I actually just got my master's in popular culture in Bowling Green State University, and we talk about community, and we talk about the internet in relation to community a lot. And I think a key point to talk about in this conversation is that often when a troll is doing these kind of tactics, the community itself reacts, either by ignoring them or in turn turning his point of phrase or saying what he's saying and putting it on his own head in some ways. So that's, I think that's a key point. And also anonymity in relation to trolls, it is kind of cathartic in some ways, and some of these boards allows people to go out and just say what they want to say, even if especially in places where they're otherwise unable to.
So we can see a role for that. You know, catharsis can be great, but if you've got all this anonymity and an almost infinite space for, you know, going cathartic, can it also drag us into a pit of darkness, Sean?
Well, yeah, but you have to kind of put in, kind of think about the context of these kind of boards. These are tech-savvy, often teenagers, young adults, people who are aware of, you know, how they can, how their information is presented online, how the repercussions of what they're saying. I mean,
there's a known role in a way that they're playing here. I mean, let us pick that up, if I may. Whitney, what about this notion of online communities, thank you, Sean, of online communities knowing sort of organically how to deal with trolls? Do you see that or not?
Well, I think that every community is different. It's sort of like it's difficult to make blanket statements about trolls. It's difficult to make blanket statements about how different communities react to trolls. It depends on how big the community is. It depends on where the community is located, because platforms often don't determine behaviors, but they certainly put restrictions on behaviors. So, you know, trolling behaviors that you encounter on 4chan, for example, they're going to be, people will react to them, to those behaviors, very differently than behaviors encountered on a forum that doesn't typically experience any trolling. And so if you have on 4chan's B-board, for example, where lots of trolls go, if someone tries to troll, that's just par for the course. That's what happens when you go on that forum. Now, if a troll were to go onto some blog or some forum somewhere where that wasn't standard behavior or expected behavior, people might not know how to react, and the reaction that they did have might be not exactly violent, because we're talking about online spaces, but people would really freak out because they're not used to it. So it depends on how sort of comfortable with or familiar with trolls the community is. That sort of determines how the community will react to it.
I mean, it can be awfully tough. I mean, there's behavior, which is, I guess, virtual behavior, but not entirely virtual. What's virtual anymore? Online, Jonathan, that in a bar room or a bus station would get somebody maybe beaten.
Absolutely. And you look at the classic move of putting a video online that might be extremely embarrassing for the person in the video, and the person might not even have been aware that he or she was being recorded.
Showing them virtually or in a humiliating circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then it has real-world consequences, and it's the kind of thing you would never do face-to-face with a person. And in some ways, I think of the bus monitor bullying video from the summer of 2012 as it kind of illustrates both sides of this.
This is the older, heavyset woman who the sort of middle school kids just ravaged on the bus, and that went very viral.
It did. And it went viral not, I think, because people wanted to join the kids in enjoying the torment of Karen Klein, the bus monitor, but because in some way I think almost all of us have been there at one time or another. And for those of us for whom seventh grade is a dim and thankfully dim memory, it just brings it back so instantaneously. Wow, that's what seventh graders can do. I mean, it's just terribly, terribly cruel. It's interesting to see that the reaction to that by one guy starting up a site about it, he wanted to raise $5,000 on Indiegogo to give her a vacation.
Yeah.
He raised over $700,000 right. to give to this woman.
Right, trolls on the bus and a lot of money in her bank account at the end. She dealt with it so kind of nobly in her way that I think, and it was so harsh, it got a lot of people's heartstrings. We're looking at internet trolls, and of course, you can find trolls all over. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let me get a call here from Millbrook, Alabama. Price is calling. Price, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm in kind of a unique position. I don't really engage with people online, and but because of my vehicle, I've actually, the pictures of my truck have actually ended up at sites like Reddit and numerous R atheism and that sort of thing.
Why? Why?
My personalized tag is the University of Alabama tag, and I use the A from the University of Alabama to spell out the word atheist. So it's actually atheist.
Okay.
Being an atheist in Alabama is probably not smartest thing to do, just to advertise.
And it's on your truck. But, your truck's been photographed. The photographs are online. And what, do you feel hounded there, Price?
Well, no, and that's just it. That I don't feel hounded at all. I have no problem with it. But what I do find interesting talking about the trolling thing is it just recently ended up, my wife and I were at a restaurant, and it was parked outside, and somebody took a picture of it, and a buddy of mine said, "Hey, your truck's on Reddit." I was like, "Okay." And went and looked at it, and it's, I've come to discover, like, the median IQ in the country is, like, 100, so, like, less than, you know, like, half the population has a two-digit IQ, and it's really obvious when you look at comments at Reddit.
Were the comments rough there, Price? Were they rough?
Well, some of them are very nice, and they say that, you know, I'm brave, which I'm not. I'm just, you know, a guy who doesn't hide anything. But the other ones are these entire assumptions made about being arrogant, and that I've actually had people say that he deserves to get beat up, he deserves to get stabbed, and all this. And it's all from people who I've never engaged with, who I've never talked to, completely based on the fact that the guy that I just have a tag that just says I'm an atheist.
Price, be safe there. I'm very glad for your call. Let me take it to Whitney and Jonathan. So, Whitney, is this bring us into the world of trolls, or is this just human behavior with one leg, you know, on a pickup truck in a parking lot in Alabama and another leg online and rough response?
Oh, So negative behaviors? Are you asking if that's human nature?
I hope it's not quite that bald, but here, in the age of the internet, we have an atheist who states it loud and proud on his truck. That photo of that goes online, and he's got a trail of venomous commentary about him and his truck, and he's identified. Trolling, or not?
I mean, it's a kind of a provocative thing to put on your car. So I think that, you know, people will talk about provocative issues, and I don't think that that's necessarily the product of online. You know, that's not really the product of the internet. That's not really a product of anonymity.
Though they might say things to and about him there that they might not say to his face.
I could imagine if there were a party, let's say, and everybody was in person, and he rolled up with his truck and it said atheist, people would talk about it. They might sort of murmur stuff under their breath. Mm-hmm. Some people might say it to his face, but I think that that's one of those cases where it's, I mean, I don't want to make assumptions on Price's behalf, but, you know, he's making a statement. And so people are going to react to that. And it could be that online, it's simply easier to react more quickly. And so people do. I don't know if that's as much a comment on human nature as it is. Well, I don't know. I don't think that that's so much trolling as it is just people having an outlet for conversation.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about internet trolls, online pranksters, bullies, vandals, thugs, maybe gadflies, and their footprint in our increasingly online national conversation. Whitney Phillips is with us, lecturer on digital culture at New York University, blogs at billionsandbillions.com. Jonathan Zittrain is here, author of The Future of the Internet and How to Stop It. Interesting responses online, and people saying, oh, what, are we just going to say anybody who disagrees with us is a troll? I think that would be a big mistake. Derek writes, what is a troll? He says, our nation has become a society of shut-ins, and they only expose themselves to others who share their worldviews. At this point, anyone who doesn't agree with someone else is labeled a troll. The art of polite human interaction has been sidelined by technology to the point where just disagreeing with someone is seen as some kind of subterfuge. Well, I don't know about polite there. It's not all polite. people develop their own moralities here. Whitney, Jonathan, John says, I don't post anything I wouldn't say in person. Mike, this is interesting. It says, I played the troll role in the past, mostly on message boards of the self-righteous, being an experiment in how far I could parody the, you know, my parody would go before the troll identity was discovered. This is Mike, I wondered if it was that or if it was just ego fulfillment that he was up to. I'm smarter than these people. He says, my guess is it was a tad of both, but his question is, where is the fine line between satirist and troll? When does something cross the line between constructive commentary entertainment to crass destructive to dialogue behavior? If you had to put rules on troll etiquette, what would they be? Jonathan, can you draw that line between satirism and trolling?
Not very easily, and certainly not a line I'd want to somehow try to put into the law more than it might already be. But I do think that there's a sense of good faith versus bad faith, and people engaging in good faith should be able to work out differences between them. Somebody engaging in bad faith, maybe because she thinks it's a game or because they're just out to cause trouble, that needs to be contained. And thinking about how to do that, I think, is a neat puzzle without turning to some kind of legislative remedy. And for that, I think a lot of a troll's behavior in bad faith can get legs because so many people in good faith pass it along or are credulous about it. And that gets back to comfortably smug and the fake tweets that really were impacting
people about what's going down in Sandy, confusing people about what's life and death situations. I mean,
exactly.
It's interesting, though, that here Mike is not asking for a law. He's kind of looking for an internal compass, you know, in this new world we live in. I mean, here's another poster online writes to us that there's something about this new form of communication seems to bring out the inner troll in so many people, which is to say, you know, many people, many of us have it. People say and do things in the cyber world they would not think of doing in the real one. But Whitney, when we live so much in the cyber world now, when so much of our national dialogue is there, is it possible that the whole thing gets made more pointed, sharp, edgy, razor-edged, even warlike because of the new environment?
I think one of the things that I have focused on specifically in my work, it's not the ways that trolls are different from us. Big scare quotes. You can't see me, but I'm making them.
Okay.
It's the ways that trolls are like us, scare quotes, that trolls are embedded within much larger systems than just online troublemaking. They don't come out of nowhere.
You've written they're directly reflective of the culture out of which they emerge, i.e. all of us.
Well, all of us, not exactly all of us. I mean, specifically in systems, institutions, the media, for example, that trolling behaviors are not only experienced online. Trolling behaviors really are embedded within a lot of the conversations that we have in, quote, civilized society. But then online, they kind of are amplified by a million. And then trolls become the easy scapegoat for the reason why we can't have nice things. And I think that, yes, trolls definitely cause a great deal of problems online. But because they're embedded in these systems, because you see a lot of the same behaviors reflected in the behaviors of mainstream, certainly sensationalist corporate media outlets, it's really important when you stop and say, what can we do about trolls?
Well, so are you saying a troll is like a mini tabloid, or is that what you – what do you mean by systems in mainstream media in this case?
Well, so when I talk about memorial page trolls on Facebook, for example. Yes,
that
you
is
have
trolls
these
who come into places where people are mourning the dead and despoil them, in effect.
And essentially exploiting grief for their own personal gain. It's very easy to look at those behaviors and say, that's wrong, and that's gross, and that's inappropriate, and how could you do that? But what doesn't happen in those conversations are questions about how trolling is, in some cases, aligned with the ways in which sensationalist media also treats tragedy, also presents tragedy. That you have, interestingly, a very strange symbiotic relationship oftentimes between trolls who exploit details of a particular tragedy and then corporate media outlets who amplify those very same details. So trolls and the media are actually very good for each other. They amplify each other's stuff.
Good and for each other's business, in effect.
Essentially, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's no coincidence that trolls refer to, self-identifying trolls, refer to their behaviors as, quote, serious business.
But our listeners online asks, you know, are we in an amplification chamber of this side of human nature overall because of the web and its anonymity and all the rest? Now that somehow, you know, pulls down the tenor, I don't know, efficacy, openness of our whole national conversation when so much is here. Jonathan?
And I think we're still in the early stages of coming to grips with the power of the web and what it can mm-hmm. do to us and what we can do with it. And there are always going to be some, you know, hardcore trolls, that's just out what they're there to do because it's fun for them or because that's how they advance an agenda. Fred Phelps and the Westboro Baptist Church are real world trolls by this definition. You know, they give thanks because Congresswoman Giffords was shot. They picket military funerals. Yeah. They're doing their best to get into that cycle Whitney was talking about mm-hmm. to get coverage for their beliefs. But putting that aside, I think, as soon as you get into the middle zone, there are ways to change the way the web works for the better, not to restrict anybody.
What are you? Is it citizen justice here?
No.
What is it?
So, for example, Twitter could implement something that's like an X tweet, a kind of undo tweet, not a delete, but that says, hey, I retweeted something because I thought it was true. I thought there was 3 feet of water in the New York Stock Exchange yeah. or that a hospital on Long Island was on fire. It turns out not to be true. I want to send out an X tweet that says, belay that order.
So kind of social movement of correction here.
Exactly.
Fact checking.
That goes out to everybody who was part of the viral chain of retweeting, and all those people have a chance to pay forward that correction. And that's a way that the technology can help people be people in good faith. And similarly, we can do what's called metadata around photos and videos, the mm-hmm. objects that mm-hmm. are often what trolling uses. And people who are featured in those pictures or videos might have a chance to later contextualize what they're doing. So they're not just one data point. Somebody makes an assumption yep. about what the guy in the truck with his bumper sticker about Alabama and atheism mm-hmm. means. He has a chance later, once it's gone viral, to say, hey, everybody, this is what was going on. It wasn't my truck. Or I really believe this, but this is why. Those are technological changes that could be made that would, I think, greatly affect the landscape because there may be a sense that, hey, if you put yourself out there online, you're just opening yourself up to whatever comes back. Yeah. You should grow a thicker skin. But I don't think that's that satisfying a solution. You shouldn't have to have a thick skin to engage in a conversation.
And there may be social media responses to what's going on. Spencer in Lowell, Massachusetts. Spencer, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Whitney might know this by a different name, but I'm going to clean it up for you guys. There's a nice thing called the Internet Jerkwad Theory, where you take a normal person, add anonymity, and they become a total jerkwad.
Yeah.
Because they can just say whatever they want, because they don't care who finds out, you know, who reads it, because they're not going to find out who they are.
Right.
That's a great thing behind trolling.
I think we can all understand this theory, Spencer.
Yeah, I got that from a comic online called Penny Arcade. But I mean, I'm a troll, and like Whitney had said before, there, you know, you go through kind of phases throughout the day where you'll be a fact checking troll. You know, someone on Facebook says something about, let's say, Mitt Romney, and you don't think it's right. You go fact check it, and you're that person that's always correcting everyone.
Does that make you a troll? I mean, that sounds, I don't know, that sounds like a civic contribution if it were the truth.
To always be that person, to be that one, to always fact check everything and end up getting blocked on Facebook, I think would kind of go under the auspices of being a troll.
Yeah.
But I have fun with being a troll too. My friends and I will make up things and just go with it. Like, I'm sure you've probably seen a quote from Abraham Lincoln. Never trust quotes on the internet. They're never valid.
That from Abraham Lincoln. Well, that one we can spot a mile away, Spencer. You've got a humane touch to your trolling as represented there that I appreciate. But it's interesting who kind of self-identifies or self-deputizes here to go out and play some of that role. I appreciate hearing from you, Spencer. Let me get one more here. Peter in Des Moines, Iowa. Peter, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was accused of being a troll, and I've been kicked off numerous blog sites. And I want to say there's a fine line between being willing to discuss anything out there under the sun.
Yep.
And being accused of a troll. I kind of prided myself of being able to discuss anything. So I would get into issues that were not popular, like legalization of marijuana. If there was a news story about a pedophile, I would discuss it in length.
Okay.
And for these, I would be sort of punished and kicked off, ganged up on, until finally the editors side with the whole mob and they kick me off. And here's the other thing I wanted to say about this whole thing, is that the problem with this is that once you present yourself as an open-minded expansionist individual, like a philosopher of sorts,
okay,
there are other people can come on there now and then sort of hijack your name, and then people start to get confused as to whether or not you're this person or that person.
So they might use your handle and go really incendiary when you are just expanding the conversation or something, Peter.
Yes. And then there's other people who are actually true trolls that are really heinous in what they write, and then they jump on, and then people start thinking, oh, it must be you. And I've been accused of that. There was one person that came on and started talking about sex with animals, zoophobia, and everyone said, oh, that must be that one guy because he's willing to discuss anything.
So that's
what happens.
Yeah, the free thinker gets sort of tagged as the troll, or maybe even piggybacked there. And off we go. It could be a tough role to play, and before you know it, you're ostracized from a site. Let me get a few more here, if I may. Nathan in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Nathan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to say a little more. I see you guys are talking about like trolls who are like in conversation, but there's also those other trolls who come from like a different subform, and they come to like harass. Have you guys ever like?
To harass, yes, of course.
Yeah, like those kind of trolls are the ones that I attract. Like, I'm a big online gamer, and they all love to come and attack me like that through words and through, like, they somehow figure out, either use my IP or something, they figure out my Facebook. I've had them linked to my Facebook.
So it's to the point where you feel, what, exposed, hurt, wounded?
Yeah, very, and there's nothing I can do about it because they can't track them at all. So it's not anything legally. It's just like they spread that, and then they'll spread the rumors online. It'll keep on going. They'll find YouTube videos I posted. They'll just everything, and it's like those kind of trolls are the ones that I cannot stand.
I mean, that sounds like it ends in misery if you're the one who's getting piled on. Nathan, I appreciate your call. Jonathan, what about this? I mean, here, you know, the pain can be real. It's not all just about discourse and expanding its boundaries. It can get into, we all know, our kind of pack animal side.
I think that's true, and it makes me think that we spend so much time worrying about what our kids in school should be doing. We have some sense that the curriculum feels very mid-20th century, if not earlier. It would be so wonderful to have the kids that are in school, and probably when they're not under watch, they're engaging in trolling or being trolled online anyway. It's such an opportunity to have them participate in an apprenticeship sort of way to these new forums and to these new forms of expression. I mean, it's a great time to be a free thinker. It's a great time to have such access to information,
yep,
even as the traditional public square is being overrun by another form of trolling. Like as somebody on the On Point forum is just pointing out, there's a lot of companies, governments, and others that now pay people to go on and troll for their particular point of view. And again, I say it's trolling because it's not in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the AstroTurf groups that are running ads to tell you something or another. So just as our traditional forums are being overrun by entities not participating truly for the sake of a discussion, there is this opportunity online to have those discussions and to encourage the next generation of discussants who are sitting in school to have experience doing it with some real guidance, with human moderation, not just technical moderation in the forum.
Whitney, you find it reflective of a human nature as expressed that goes way beyond the web. So is it ever with us until we somehow become finer people off the web as well? Or you know, do we just have to live with it? Does it amplify part of us that may not be our best side?
Well, I try to avoid talking about whether or not it speaks to our human nature, because I don't know what that means. But what I do know is that trolling behaviors are reflective, like I said, of more things than just the trolls themselves. And so if we really want to think about what we should do, what we should do about trolls legally and also just individually on forums, we need to think about the bigger questions. Where do we see these behaviors other than just in trolling behaviors? And if we really have a problem with trolls, and I readily concede there is a lot to take issue with, we need to think about where some of these behaviors stem. I mean, one of the things that I've focused on is the ways in which this kind of discourse, this sort of rhetoric, taps into and in fact is kind of the poster child for, in a lot of ways, the Western philosophical tradition and its emphasis on fighting, on winning arguments.
Socratic challenge, yeah.
Exactly. That if trolling is a problem, then we want to think about the root of the real problem. And the real problem is not the internet. It's not anonymity. It's deeper. And so we have to think a little bit deeper and a little bit more thoughtfully if we want to respond thoughtfully to these emerging behaviors.
Wow, that's deep indeed. From Socrates to the troll next door. Whitney Phillips at NYU, blogging at billionsandbillions.com. Whitney, we're grateful for your insights today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jonathan Zittrain at Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. Jonathan, great to have you here today. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Listeners all, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.